Chapter 4. Gall Primus.
Are we solely responsible for the billion lives in Gall Cluster?
Baron Bendix, the Bloodthorn has made its claim. Are you willing to let that stand?
Inquisitor, you know what lurks outside my domain. I can't pick apart those evil strands any more than you.
The demands of the Hive still matter. A balance must be maintained regardless of the curses and abominations. As Lord of the Underhive, that is your mandate.
The rope is on fire. We can't hold it much longer.
That's why I'm here. It's time to start our own fire and fight back.
That Malleus badge isn't magic. The power of the Emperor won't leap out and make things right.
The Underhive exists for those that harvest desperation. Stand aside for the moment and let me do my duty.
For the time being, my name remained off of Inquisitor Agrimont's list. Primaris Rovira summarized her view of the Gaul situation, pointing out our tenuous hold on Primus and the fact that retreat would be nearly impossible for all but a chosen few. The remaining Loyalist forces were merely the reserves from a far larger army that had protected the entire cluster only a few months earlier. The militant savant's plan was simple, and Rovira was a mind-bending optimist. To buy time, our main objective would be to eliminate the Felguard, followed by the enemy's command structure. Given that, plenty of luck, and a well-timed counterattack, the ensuing chaos would tear the local rebel forces apart. Reclaiming the captured cities was an incomprehensible feat, and best considered once the enemy forces were eliminated.
"And where will you go first?"
said General Skivix. Rovira knew exactly what I wanted. She'd known all along, even before we'd arrived in the Aegea system.
"Our line center, 1st Division of the Fulcrum 10th Legion."
Our packs had arrived via an unceremonious pass of a Valkyrie gunship over the defunct spaceport. We trudged down a service tunnel on the heels of General Julius McMartin, the officer in charge of the Fulcrum 10th, and his adjutant. The adjutant, an enormous, strong-armed ogryn named Dargots, hefted Rovira's pack with ease as she picked the general's brain. Bringing up the rear, Junior Commissar Passingen lugged his entire worth, mimicking the rest of us. We passed under the city's protective dome shield and followed a supply trench into the underground complex backing the front lines. Engineering crews continued their mandate to dig, spray, and plascrete, and repair whatever the guard units managed to break. It kept the crews too busy to flee. In that same vein, the valuable mechanized platoons were stowed in underground garages and barred from access to their limited supplies of fuel. Our tension grew with every step nearer the front lines. Tempe's venom finally bubbled over and she hissed in my ear.
"Your chosen ox, is that what we are?"
10 militant savants marched with me across the stage of Gall Primus. Of course, they'd be marching into similarly dangerous situations on other worlds if I hadn't submitted their names to the Imperial Guard. Few recruits were given the luxury of a familiar face or one that truly cared about their well-being. If I said yes, would you thank me and leave it alone?
"I should thank you for this."
Tempe pointed to the blood-stained corridor and waved her hand in the air, as if to capture the stench that came with ad hoc plumbing. She was scared, and it was all my fault. I snapped back, "Tempe, is Vidal that bad in the sack?" Tempe took a moment to consider my question and its implications.
"Well, he's got habitually cold feet. His toes are like ice."
"And the rest of him?"
"Warm enough."
"Good, then be glad." To punctuate my remark, Vidal grabbed Tempe's pack, spun her around and kissed her hard on the mouth.
"Quit flirting with our funnel."
"I wasn't... Okay, you got me."
Tempe cast a sly grin at Vidal, enjoying his distraction. She knew who split her rations.
"But you're wearing socks tonight if they assign us bunks and give us a chance to sleep."
Vidal kept the upper hand.
"I wouldn't call what we do sleep."
"I'd say it was quite loud."
Rasa startled everyone with her candid observation. She wasn't talking about Tempe's penchant for snoring. Putting it mildly, Rasa was the reserved type. Her sentence at Scola Sicana had been punctuated by a violent attack. A friend she'd trusted to protect her had lost control in the worst possible way. The event had happened before I'd arrived on Terra, and the young man that did it was long gone, but the result was there for everyone to see. I didn't know if it had made Rasa tougher, cynical, or more fragile, but I kept an eye on the young woman from a distance, as did everyone in our lightning arc. A life-changing encounter at Sicana saw me falling 400 feet off of a service platform after mistakenly saving her life. It turned out that her life hadn't needed saving at the time. I was simply the mark for a bit of personal payback. I hadn't been the one to hurt Rasa, but the previous funnel to rule the roost of Psychana had planned the deception, and Rasa had gone along with it like everyone else. I didn't regret my intentions. The young woman was certainly worth saving. But neither Rasa nor I had been anything but dysfunctional at the time or since. Rasa was a pretty girl, capable and athletic, and I wouldn't have minded sharing warmer body parts with her, but we still hadn't figured out how to get past the disconnect. That left me flirting with Tempe Azar, and thankfully, Vidal was the laid-back sort. When Tempe wasn't pushing everyone's buttons, she had taken on the role of Rasa's best friend. Tempe had grown up in Sub-Zero, the rough, dense subterranean sectors of any hive city. She knew that life was a harsh game, but you had to play it until the end. You'd have eternity to complain about it afterward. Play it until the end, but keep your socks on. Looking around, I found the imposing uniform of our assigned watchdog. Commissar Passingen, what brings you to the front?
An unpredictable company needs a bit of straightening up. Commissar Bleacher thought it an apt first assignment for me.
I held out my hand. I'm Five. Let me know if you need any help.
Likewise.
How many bullets are in that bolt pistol of yours? 6 or an unwieldy 10?
6.
Passingen was sorely under-equipped for the front. His straight-edge saber and sidearm would give him 10 seconds of protection at best, but he still carried more ordnance than I.
Savant, where are your auxiliary weapons?
Tempe saw her new mark.
Five's not allowed to carry any firearms. His Medicaid record says he's psychotic.
For the record, there's a difference between being psychotic and clinically insane, but in my case, it really didn't matter. Passingen took the bait.
The Primaris said he was remarkably stable.
It's all relative. Five is one of the unmarked. He came within a hair's breadth of killing a commissar, a Schola Psychana Proctor, and himself.
The Schola Proctor hadn't survived, but it had been her choice, not mine. The commissar was another story, and proof that I hadn't completely lost my way. As to myself, well, there I'd succeeded, though that secret hadn't been shared beyond the guarded vaults of Ordo Hereticus. The commissar fired first, I said. I hadn't done anything to deserve his wrath, but he wanted to make an example out of me for the rest of the Psychana Sanctionites. This was Passingen's first real encounter with a militant savant. He squinted as if trying to see through the charade.
How long were you in the Medicai?
I spent a month holding the hand of a pretty biomantic healer. I'd never thanked Commissar Belling for providing that experience. That the healer detested me had made it all the more exciting. Helix and I had disagreed intensely when it came to my darker past. Some women, like Commissars, simply couldn't look beyond my ignorant choices or their lethal results. The path we were on began angling downward as we neared the literal edge of sanity on a GF5. Command posts, barracks, Medicaid wards and supply depots existed deep beneath the surface. Ramps and ladders led upward to the fighting trenches and gun emplacements. The 5,000 soldiers in the Fulcrum 10th's 1st Division defended 1 mile of the overall Primus Arc. Duty companies were swapped out every 12 hours unless an enemy attack was underway. As the Fulcrum Legion's overall commander, General McMartin lived with the Fulcrum 1st Division in a small suite attached to the Legion's HQ. He'd been raised in a Schola Progenium and placed on a path to command in the Imperial Guard. He wasn't a native of Fulcrum IV. None of the highest-ranking officers were, but numerous captains and lieutenants had been commissioned from the best candidates on my homeworld. One was my brother Ramsey. 10 years older than me and a veteran of the PDF, Ram had been slotted in as a captain in the 1st Division, a company commander in the 1st Regiment. I yearned to know Ram's fate before anything else, but I had bets to place and fell guard to hunt. Helmets on and shields up, I said. Let's take a look at what we've gotten ourselves into. Lieutenant Keitra Davin was assigned to explain the general layout of the defenses and escort us topside. Her company was offline until nightfall. I knew the lieutenant's name from a previous life, but couldn't see her face beneath the helmet. She'd been a lieutenant in the Fulcrum PDF when I was only a cadet. I hadn't seen her since the day I took a wrong turn and veered into the Underhive sector of my home city more than 3 years ago. She would be the first to remind me of more distant names. We invaded an empty gun emplacement overlooking the forward trenches. Most lines below us hosted guard troops carrying laser guns and officers glued to comms. The gun crews were safely stowed in their bunkers, maintaining their field pieces and keeping their heads down until needed. A mile behind us, Gaul Primus shimmered. The dome shield was normally powered to protect the hive from the planet's harsh weather. Its bluish tint indicated that it was running at full power, suitable for stopping artillery barrages as well as the planet's frequent storms. The city would have to ration its energy and shut down non-critical systems to keep the stronger barrier in place. That Gaul Primus remained under Loyalist control made little sense to me. The last hive should have been easy pickings once the five outlying cities surrendered. There was a hint there, one the general and his staff hadn't mentioned. Perhaps this war was more about appetite than territory, and if that was the case, the Bloodthorn was certainly being well fed. Looking due east, a bare no-man's land existed between Gaul Primus and the surrounding hives. Throughout the contested ground, military-grade sensors, minefields, and a carpet of fallen combatants covered the gaps between makeshift tunnels and trenches that offered protection to either side. In the distance, nominal shields glowed above each fallen hive, hinting at life and the need to preserve it. Imperial artillery based far to the west had refused to shell the lost cities until it was certain nothing could be reclaimed. Occasionally, escapees wandered into the Imperial lines. Most were promptly arrested and quarantined, but in some cases, they were immediately dispatched for the incorrigible mind disease they carried. Telepathy wasn't my strong suit, but simple, familiar words were easy enough to construct and amplify, backed by a wisp of silver-hued energy. I leaned over the emplacement's forward wall and projected my inner voice out into the landscape, whispering my name over and over. Five is here, and scanning for any hunters lurking in the distance. It didn't take long for one to whisper back. A hot-shotted laser bolt slammed into my shield, sparking off a dazzling display of light energy. Startled, I ducked behind the wall. Another bolt burst through the plascrete in front of me, showering the emplacement with chunks of debris. Everyone scrambled into cover behind a ceramite blast shield as an alarm sounded up and down the line. I tapped the side of my helmet. "What's that alarm?" LT Davin pointed out the obvious.
"Sniper alert."
"Does the sniper have a name?" She shook her head.
"How would we know that?"
The sniper was good. Too good. From at least a half mile away, it had picked me out, aimed and fired, all in less than 3 seconds, planting a would-be headshot on its target. That explained why everything remained buttoned up. The strategy would save lives but slow the guard's response during any future attacks. It was time to take a chance. "I've got to go." I rolled onto my side and dropped into a sleep trance, leaving my body behind. I rushed eastward, a ghost in search of a sniper. The Felguard were chained to creatures of the warp. To my unreal eyesight, the hunter's ugly red aura was easy enough to spot in the broken landscape. The sniper scurried toward a narrow trench that zigzagged east, a long laser rifle and a heavy charge canister strapped across its lower back. The pack was camouflaged to appear as so much rubble, but I knew its familiar design and the danger it posed if it overheated. I moved in for the kill, intending to overload the power pack as the fiend slid into the rebel trench. An order came to me from on high.
"Don't kill it, follow it."
Rovira. I zipped forward in my astral form, maintaining a cloak and checking for more red blotches at every angle. Paired with a rogue psyker, warp hunters could battle in their ethereal form, and as the astral hunter on the Valkyrie gunship found out, somebody could always hit you hard enough to cut the cord of your life. It only took one true strike with enough dark energy to do the trick. At the end of the jagged trench, the sniper entered the encirclement's main line. The Felguard's pace seemed to waver, giving me a prickly feeling as I decided my next move. I could take out the sniper and run for it or press on until I found something even more meaningful. My final decision came down to the fact that I'd announced my presence to whatever Felguard happened to be listening. It would seem rather weak not to make good on it. In my astral form, I was limited to attacking with my store of silver-tinted energy or manipulating the mundane energy around me. Seeing an opening into the underground passages of the rebel forces, I made my move. The sniper's charge pack exploded, removing the assassin's lower spine and sending shards of its torso skyward. I raced past it into the tunnel ahead, welcome to the abyss. I didn't know what to expect, but the underground workings offered a sadistic hint of things to come. The place was a twisted mess of barracks, refuse pits, and untended ammo dumps. Sigils of blood were painted everywhere on the tunnel walls and ceiling, burning me as I brushed past them. There was a mind-twisting energy about them. The markings pulsed in a blinding reddish light, and the deeper I explored, the more stifling and angry the surroundings became. Unblooded. The twist filled my mind with a hollow rage, the need to act without reason and spread my wrath on whatever target was at hand, a hunger to be shared. Through several random encounters, I stole the body heat and bioelectricity from dozens of traitor guardsmen, flooding their nervous systems with raw dark energy and stopping their hearts. They died without a thought, done in by the disease that drove me onward. Unmarked. I didn't belong in this domain. I doubled back in search of the nearest way out. The tunnels seemed circular, endless, and I kept losing my sense of up and down. A sizable cache of weapons and charge packs appeared. I dumped all my borrowed power into the stack, unleashing a cascading explosion that turned the confusing series of tunnels into one huge chaotic cavern. An entire section of the underground complex collapsed, and fire flew down the adjoining passages. Sirens sounded in the form of muffled screams as hundreds of traitors were burned or buried alive. Unsound. The blood-coated tunnels impeded my ability to traverse through walls and ceilings, but the obliterated section presented an opening. I should have left, but I didn't. Something in my mind, a morbid curiosity or the tendrils of a blood curse, begged for me to stay and enjoy the ruin I'd made. The enemy's response carved its way through the carnage. One thing I hadn't seen in the enemy's tunnels was any sort of medikai or triage facility, and it said everything about why we fought against the forces of chaos. The blood cult that ruled half of Aegea V was in it for far darker reasons. In the adjacent passageways, the screams of the wounded were steadily silenced. A cadre of cultists in blood-soaked robes opened throats with hooked knives and chanted an unholy nine count as they filled their buckets with fresh blood. Pain and death offered up chaotic energy, and the bloods harvested it in droves. My soul recoiled, and something within me snapped. I was in too deep, and I knew it. Silver energy flooded into my mind, burning away the scene, cauterizing the psychic wound. Shocked into action, I fled. As I emerged into daylight, I couldn't shake the thought that I'd just contributed to the enemy's cause. If I hadn't been invisible, the cultists might have tried to shake my hand and thank me for the effort. Feth.